This is the Secrets of Attorney Marketing podcast from Speakeasy Marketing. Discover how to enhance your reputation as an attorney and outmarket your competitors. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast and post a review.
Good morning. This is Tracy Murder with Speakeasy Marketing Podcast. I want to thank my special guest this morning, Attorney Gary Port, co-founder of Port & Sava Attorneys at Law, a leading law firm located in New York City. Good morning, Gary. Thank you for joining me.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you for having me on.
So, Gary, I want to know a little bit about your background and what prompted you to open your own practice.
Well, first off, I'm a third-generation lawyer, basically three generations of idiots, if you will. My dad was a solo for many years. I started out in the Army, and then I was in the DA's office. I went to a mid-sized firm in Manhattan, didn't like that, went to a small firm on the island, and I was there for a few years. And then my boss did a few things I didn't feel were really appropriate, so I literally walked out one day. No plan at all. It was just like, I can't stay here. Bye. I'm out. And I did that at 40 years old with three children and one on the way.
Oh,
so it was not exactly a planned exit, and I do not recommend that for anybody. Always plan your exit.
Well, it seems that though it turned out well for you, the odds were obviously in your favor. What made you feel that, you know, starting out your own practice is going to be a success, or was it more just a leap of faith? I mean, this is a tough and risky environment in terms of any business.
Well, I think part of the problem with lawyers is we have this myth, the myth of the lawyer practitioner, the lawyer businessman, hang out your shingle and the world will beat a path to your door. And it's a myth which is well ingrained in our profession, probably going back to the time before there was this country and we were, you know, going back to the English tradition, you know, go out there and things will happen. And that myth can be kind of dangerous. People don't realize that there's a lot more to just saying, well, I'm going to set up my own practice. It's something that we as attorneys have never been prepared for. We go to law school, we work at a firm, and we learn to be lawyers, but we don't understand a thing about how to run a business. It is not something that you should do without real considerable thought.
Well, how did you start out when you had those first few months of starting your business? Was it a smooth ride? Was it, you know, just easy breezy? Or did you have some struggles? And if so, how did you survive?
It was terrifying at the beginning. I mean, at the beginning, I just had a few, a handful of clients. I was working out of my house. There was significant, this enough money from those few clients. Plus, I had a side job. I was in the Army Reserve, and I managed to do 1 to 2 weeks a month for about 3 years, which supplemented my income. Now, for other attorneys going out, you know, if they're making that leap, some of them do things like they'll work for space. In other words, they'll take an office with someone, and instead of paying rent, they'll do work for that person. Or they'll try to buddy up with another attorney, an older attorney, who will hand them work to try to supplement that first beginning. Because if you don't go out with clients, you're going to have some very lean times unless you have a secondary stream of income from someplace.
And teach a class on law office management and marketing. Tell me a little bit about what you share with those individuals who do end up taking your course.
Well, I've done some CLEs in the Nassau Bar as well as the Pennsylvania Bar on this whole issue of what you need to do. And it's what I said before, we're not good businessmen. We don't understand the front office versus the back office. Now, when I set up my practice, I was really worried about front office, which is get cases in, get them in. And between 2002 to 2008, I was doing quite well at that. But by 2008, we had the economic crisis. And when the revenues dried up, that's when the mistakes in my back office started to show up. The mistakes were I wasn't keeping track of my accounts receivable, my accounts payable, my return on investment, how much I was paying employees. When the money was just coming in, I gave no thought to that. So one of the most important things I tell people is when you set up a practice, you have to set up like a business. The first thing you've got to think of, what kind of entity are you doing? Are you going to be doing a PC? Are you going to be doing a sole proprietorship? Are you doing an LLP? What are you doing? And you have to talk to your accountant about this because there's tax implications on this. The next thing you need to do is you need to get a bookkeeper. Not a full-time one when you start, but a part-time bookkeeper, but also learn yourself what bookkeeping is so you can look over your bookkeeper's shoulder and understand what the bookkeeper's doing. Otherwise, you may end up with a bookkeeper who's either inept or corrupt. If you don't understand basic accounting, you're not going to understand what the bookkeeper's doing. You got to keep track of your expenses. You got to keep track of your receivables, and you have to look at your return on investment for your advertising. When you spend money in advertising, what are you getting back? So these are very basic business concepts that attorneys have no idea about. Again, the myth, I'm just going to hang up my shingle and the world will beat a path to my door. It doesn't work that way. It's a struggle, and if you don't understand it, you can end up going out of business. In 2008, when the crisis hit, I was fortunate. We had just hired a very good bookkeeper, and she put us on starvation wages. She basically shut everything down and was very, very militant on collecting our receivables. She changed our entire way of how we had to look at stuff, and that's very important. If you're not looking at your business as a business, then you're not going to be in business, and that's something I stress right at the very beginning when I talk to these attorneys.
That's all just incredibly interesting information, and I'm just wondering, how much of this knowledge of business management and marketing, and I mean, that's a whole other entity itself, but how much do you find attorneys do actually have before you've come into contact with them?
Almost none. In fact, in the Nassau Bar, my buddy Tom Foley, who is now what they call the Associate Dean of the Nassau Bar Academy of Law, he and I have been doing a series of programs at the Nassau Bar. We'd started out when we were running the general solo and small firm committee there, where we would just once a month bring in speakers to talk about things that attorneys don't know about but they should. Like, I brought in a real estate agent. Renting offices, how do you rent an office? I brought in an accountant, accounting for lawyers. I brought in someone from the Office of Court Administration to talk about how you can ethically collect your fees, because New York has some very strict and stringent rules that if you miscollect a fee or collect it the wrong way, you can get disbarred. I had web designers come in, social media consultants come in. We've had people come in and talk about time management, because Tom Foley is very big on time management. He runs a PI firm on the island, and he's very, very attuned to the idea of managing my time as an attorney and managing my staff's time so that my time is not wasted and their time actually leverages onto my time. And that's the kind of stuff that it's all business related, but people don't think about it. They think, well, wait, I got to be a lawyer. I got to go to court. I've got to answer papers. I got to do this. I got to do that. Yes, that's being the lawyer, but you have to be a businessman on top of that. And the gap between being a lawyer and a businessman, we have found, is huge.
I often find, I mean, we work at Speakeasy Marketing, we work with a lot of small attorney, small offices, and it blows my mind that an attorney would have the time to handle his own marketing, handle his own business, run payroll. I mean, it's astounding what all can fall on a small firm.
And that's quite right. You have to wear so many hats.
Oh.
So the question now is, can you do it all? Well, the answer is probably not, but at the beginning, you have to. At the very beginning, when you start out, you don't have the money to hire anyone. So what you've got to do is learn everything, do a little bit of everything, and as you start building, then you have to start looking and seeing where you can start putting your additional money. This is your return on investment. The bookkeeper, you go with the part-time bookkeeper first. With marketing, marketing can be very important based upon which area of law you're in, what type of marketing you use. At the very least, every lawyer needs a website. Now, the website can be either a website for straight outright marketing or merely a presence to give substance to your practice. You need to have some basic understanding of it. And then later, because you have the basic understanding, you're better fitted to hire someone and know what they're doing and not just get the fast shuffle. I'll give you a perfect example on attorneys getting the fast shuffle. More and more attorneys are being, you know, sort of pressured to take credit cards because clients want to pay with credit cards. But if you don't know anything about credit card processing, you're going to get screwed. I got screwed by my bank. I got screwed by another processor. Then I found out from another guy who turned out to be an honest credit card processor. He went through and explained to me all the hidden charges. I now save money when I take a credit card thing. So you've got to learn and then find the right person, ultimately as your practice grows, to take care of that need for you. But because you've learned, you're a better consumer when you are purchasing that service. And that's part of being a good business person as well.
So, Gary, do law schools, do you have any sort of requirements when it comes to business management or any sort of marketing courses that are required? And if not, do you think that should be part of the program?
Well, I think attorneys, well, first of all, I think the bar associations are getting better at that. As I said, the Nassau Bar. But it's very idiosyncratic. It's based upon, are there attorneys in the Bar Association who are doing this? The law schools are picking up on this. My intern is actually taking a law practice management course, but it's being taught by a guy who is the managing partner of one of the largest law firms on Long Island. And as I was saying to the kid, it's like, yeah, that's great. He's teaching how to manage a large law firm. But how much of that is really going to be applicable to the 1, 2, and 3-man operation? So I think they still need to get a little better on that. Again, because we still have this myth, going up and hang up your shingle, and the other myth of I'm going to go work for a big law firm and I'll never have to worry about this stuff.
You touched on quite a bit already, but what are some of the other bigger challenges that a small firm is going to face when it comes to marketing themselves and getting themselves out there, especially if they're starting out with, you know, little to no marketing budget?
Well, that's the first thing is most people, when they start out, they need to ask themselves, who am I as an attorney? What is my market? What is my field? Now, a lot of folks, they will go out there and they will specialize in what walks in the door. Now, that makes marketing very difficult because if you are not identifying your market, how do you know how to advertise into that market? So that is really the first thing. Who am I servicing? Now, if I am servicing, let's say I want to go into bankruptcy. Well, okay, my market is people who are going bankrupt. How do I get those people in my door? Well, there's going to be two ways. One is broadband marketing, which is internet, print media. But you also have to think about targeting, which is a lot of attorneys don't know bankruptcy. So maybe your more bang for the buck is to target and market to attorneys. So that's, again, you have to look at who your market is, and then how do those people find you? Now, I do a lot of divorce work. Most people looking for divorce lawyers are embarrassed that they're looking for divorce lawyers. And I can look on my website, and I can tell that most people are on my website at lunchtime or late at night. Very, very rarely do I get people between those times. It's a much smaller number. So it's when I'm alone and no one's looking at me, I'm going to go on the website and look for a divorce attorney. So you have that. So, again, you need to look at your marketing. Who are you targeting? And then you can sort of figure out how you can adjust your budget. If you are going to be in a field where people are going to be on the Internet a lot looking for an attorney, say as a divorce lawyer, then you're going to want to look at how to market on the Internet effectively. If you're in a field where you need to talk to other attorneys, then you need to go to bar associations. You need to network with attorneys. So that really is the first thing. Who am I? Who am I marketing to? Now you start to figure out how you get to those people.
So it sounds like a lot of effort should be spent on targeting versus just throwing a big wide net out there for marketing.
You have to. I mean, that's just, that's, you know, if you went to a straight marketing class in college, that's what they're going to tell you. But we as attorneys don't think about that. Oh, I'm a lawyer. Yeah, what the hell does that mean? What kind of lawyer are you? We are in such an age of specialization. So who are your clients and where are they getting their information from? And that's, like, my partner does a lot of high-end commercial litigation. He targets other attorneys because there's a lot of attorneys out there that don't litigate. And they have clients who may have these issues, so they'll go to another attorney. The clients that he has are not looking for him on the Internet. The clients that I have are. So, again, where are you targeting? How are you targeting? Now, just because his clients are high-end doesn't mean he doesn't have a web presence, because everyone needs a web presence now, because that when people Google you all the time, and that's one of the first things they do is they look at your web page. And if your web page is terrible, it's like walking into a disheveled, dirty, and filthy office. If you walked into an attorney's office and there's files all over the place, there's garbage flowing out of the garbage pails, there's a stale smell in the place, the windows are dirty, you're going to turn around and walk out. Same thing with a web page. You may be getting a direct referral from someone, but they're going to go check you out on that website. And if your website looks terrible, it looks cheap, it doesn't look like you are a substantial attorney, they're probably not going to call you, even though there was a buddy saying, yeah, this attorney is great. Call this gal. She knows what she's doing. If her website is bad, that could kill the whole deal right there. So that's something that's very important as well.
So, Gary, besides, you know, the targeting that we've talked about, what are some of the other ways that maybe some of the smaller firms or guys starting out can get their name out there and compete with those bigger offices with that small or, you know, little to no marketing budget? What are some other tools that are kind of out there and available?
Well, obviously, networking groups. Very important about networking. Many people don't understand how to do it properly. Networking is not, I got an email to go to a networking event and I show up there and I hand out my cards and no one calls me. That's not the way networking works. Getting into a networking group where you meet these people on a regular basis, you've now formed a relationship with these people. And that means that they start to trust you. And they know that if they refer something to you, they're going to see you every week or every other week. And if you screw up, you know you're going to have to face that person. So there's that level of trust and checking when you're in a networking group on where you meet people on a regular basis. And it's important when you network to make it clear to the people you're networking with, you know, I'm not the kind of guy that just shoves a card out and says, here, hire me. What you want to say to people in networking is, I need people like you to help my clients. So you want to make sure that they have a buy-in to your practice. So if I meet, a realtor, you know, I do divorce work. I sell houses all the time. I need a realtor. You can help me. You do insurance. We have insurance issues in divorce. I need your services. And that gets a buy-in as well. Another thing to do is, beyond the traditional networking, you can make use of social media by writing articles, not big articles, 600 words or less on LinkedIn, Facebook, on your website as a blog, geared towards clients. Too many attorneys on their websites or on their LinkedIn or other posts, they write articles like they're written for attorneys. You know, in the case of Smith versus Jones, Judge Pompous opined that. No, you know, that's not what they want. They want to know, if my spouse committed adultery, can I get the house? Well, no, you can't. Let me explain why. Is a prenup a good idea? Well, it depends. So you do conversational stuff. Keep it short. Get the message out there. But again, in a way that is easy for people to see, put it on Facebook, put it on LinkedIn, write articles for your local paper, things that start to get your name out, and keep track every week. Google your name. Go to Avvo. Go to some of these other sources where if people start to Google, your name will start to come up. It's a matter of leveraging, because, again, everyone goes back to the Internet, even if it's a direct referral. So if you start, you know, when I first started looking at this about 10 years ago, and I Googled my name, there's people with my name, but they weren't me, and they were showing up in the first three pages. Now you Google my name, and at least localize, because Google does localize it in the geographic area. In my geographic area, I generally get the first three pages if you just straight Google my name out. And the things that you see are things that people will think I'm very substantial. I ran for office. I was appointed a professor at Hofstra Law School. I've written articles. So when you start to read that, you get the impression, wow, this guy, he's substantial. And it's all a matter of getting your name out in as many different venues as possible, so when Google collates all that together, you have a strong web presence, and people say, hey, that person is reputable. That person is around. That person is someone that people respect.
And just touching on some of the things that you mentioned, too, I find that, you know, as myself, a layperson, getting that information from an attorney in layman's terms is so much less intimidating and so much more helpful in terms of actually being able to process it as a consumer.
Oh, absolutely. Because, again, you know, lawyers have a tendency, as in every profession, we get so tied into our own lingo, whether you're talking about law, medicine, law enforcement, military. We all have our own secret handshake, and we sometimes forget that when the person comes in, they have no idea what we're talking about. And if we don't bring it into their vernacular, we're sort of locking them out. So we need to make ourselves look smart but accessible. And one of the other things that I did, I hate these videos on lawyer websites where the video shows up and the lawyer looks all so serious and, you know, at Dewey, Skroom & Howe, we care for our clients and we take, it annoys the hell out of me. What I did was something deliberately the other way. I had my associate and I sit down in front of some law books in a slightly amateurish thing. She and I spent 5 minutes talking about various legal issues. But the key on those discussions was, one, it wasn't a talking head, but two, it was two people talking together who seemed like nice people. And that was the goal. I wanted people to look at this video and say, hey, I like those two. They seem like they're really good people. And I've gotten good feedback from that. People who've gone to my website, seen the video, and said, you know, you guys really seem like nice folks. Well, that was my point. I didn't want to look like I was a ponderous, you know, self-important, pretentious guy, because I'm not. And that's not what people want from an attorney. They want someone who's accessible. They want someone who knows what they're doing, but is a human being is going to care about me. And that's what we tried to portray in those videos. These are the kind of people we really are.
And just one more thing about the social media you kind of touched on. I've heard, you know, conflicting reports on from attorneys on what works and what doesn't. What do you find are your thoughts on using social media, and what are some irresponsible ways?
Well, social media is constantly evolving because the audience is constantly changing. What was a really great website 10 years ago is a really ugly website now. In fact, it was a really great website a year ago, maybe an ugly website now. People are constantly changing. Google is constantly changing their algorithms. And you've got to figure out what it is. You can't be promiscuous because that's the problem, because Google will hammer you on being promiscuous as well. And you've got to really look at, again, what is my target audience? What is my plan? What am I trying to achieve? And then the other thing, very important with the social media, Google searches social media just like Google searches everything else. And you've got to figure out what are the words that people are looking at when they do searching, okay? And this is where a good SEO person can help you out and a bad one can mess you up. When a person is searching for an attorney, they may be searching, they may just write in, say, divorce attorney. Well, the word divorce attorney has a very high value on Google searches. So a lot of people are spending a lot of money on that. So if you use divorce attorney and you're not spending a lot of money, you're going to get crushed by the big guys. So we have to do is think, what are people actually looking at? Are they writing divorce attorney, or are they writing things like, if my wife cheats, can I get the house? That's a real search term. It shows up quite a bit on my pages. So you have to then start to think about in your search engine optimization, on your social media, on your blog posts, what are the words that real people are going to be looking at? A good SEO person can take a look at the Google Analytics and start running some of those numbers. Yeah, maybe 1 million people look for divorce lawyers, and 1,000 people look for, if my wife cheats, can I get the house? But for a small guy, if 1,000 people are looking for that, I'm going to do my SEO on that term because a lot fewer people are, as you would say, bidding against that term, so I can get more people onto my website and looking at that as opposed to trying to compete against divorce lawyer. So that's part of the thing that these guys don't understand. You have to look at how people are searching, how many people are searching with those terms, and then the value of those terms as part of the open market competition, trying to get Google's attention.
This has been some great information, Gary, and I'm sure it'll be helpful to a lot of our listeners out there. Are there any final words of wisdom that you can share with other attorneys out there who are struggling to make a name for themselves or who might be finding it difficult to market their firm?
Well, I think that the best thing is, one, be a careful consumer when you are doing the marketing. Two, you have to be patient. Some of the marketing schemes are not going to turn anything overnight. They may take 2, 3, 4 months, and you then have to check at the cost that you're paying for it against your return on investment. And that's really why I keep coming back to the return on investment. Most places you want to give at least 3 months to, because it takes at least 3 months to really get that campaign going. And if you don't have the money and you don't have the time, then you're wasting your time because, you know, well, I spend money for a couple of weeks and nothing happened. Well, of course nothing's going to happen. Marketing takes time to build roots, and it isn't something that happens overnight. It takes months to get the campaign going, and it takes years to get the name really out there. And if you think that people are going to beat it past your door immediately, you're probably delusional.
Well, I just want to really thank you for your time, Gary. This has been a true pleasure. A special thanks to my guest, Attorney Gary Port of Port and Sava Attorneys at Law. Gary, if someone would like some more information on perhaps the courses that you teach or just to get into contact with you in general, what is the best way to reach you?
My office number is 516-352-2999. And my email is Gary@PortSava.com, GaryPortSava.com. And if anyone's a member of the Nassau Bar Association, you can get some of these courses that we teach on DVD. And I believe that the Pennsylvania Bar also recorded my CLEs there. So if you're a member of the Pennsylvania Bar, you can contact them and get copies of those presentations as well.
Oh, that's excellent, Gary. Thank you so much. All right. Well, I appreciate your time, and this is Tracy Murda with Speakeasy Marketing Podcast signing off. Thank you so much, Gary. Have a good one.
Okay, thank you so much. All right, bye.
You've been listening to the Secrets of Attorney Marketing Podcast from Speakeasy Marketing. Call 888-225-8594 or email rj@speakeasymarketinginc.com to enhance your reputation and outmarket your competitors. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast and post a review.